I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, allaussieradio.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we've got three guests. First of all, we start off in Lightning Ridge and I chat with Mel and Susie, the Bush Poets.
Oh, that sounds exciting. And then next, we're speaking to Mark Smith from You Fix It about a windscreen repair kit.
That's right, a self-repair windscreen kit. Great if you're broken down on the side of the road. And straight after that, we are going to be talking to our regular speaker on the show, Mr. Jeff Diath, who's going to be talking to us about towing capacity.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Very interesting. Now, Lynn, apart from all these great interviews, we've also got a fabulous selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
Now, we are about to bring Mel and Susie into the program, okay? But before we do that, I would just like to give you a little snippet of their wonderful, wonderful talent. They are, as I said, they're Australian bush champions in poetry. And this is my most favourite poem, okay? In fact, I did request it when I saw Mel and Susie back in 2017 at the Opal Caravan Park in Lightning Ridge. And Mel so graciously recited it for me. Now, I'm going to play you this particular poem, which is called The Man from Snowy River. Now, it's got Mel and Susie and Milton, who is now sadly no longer with us, okay? Milton Taylor. It's from one of Mel and Susie's albums. It's called My Country, Australia's favourite bush verse, recited by Mel, Susie and Milton Taylor, folks. All right, so I'm going to put this on right now. And then after that, we are going to have Mel and Susie from Lightning Ridge.
Since the 1890s, one bush poem has held the imagination and the spirit of the Australian people. That poem is The Man from Snowy River by A.B. Patterson. There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away.
And had joined the wild bush horses.
He was worth £1,000.
So all the cracks had gathered to the fray.
All the tried and noted riders from the stations, near and far, had mustered at the homestead overnight.
For the bushmen love hard riding where the wild bush horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight.
There was Harrison. He made his pile when Pard and won the cup. The old man with his hair as white as snow. But few could stay beside him when his blood was fairly up. He would go wherever horse and man could go.
And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand.
No better horseman ever held the reins.
For never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. He learnt to ride while droving on the plains.
And one was there, a stripling, on a small and weedy beast.
He was something like a racehorse, undersized, with a touch of Timor pony.
Three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized.
He was hard and tough and wiry.
Just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread.
And he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head.
But still, so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay. And the old man said,
"That horse'll never do for a long and tiring gallop, lad. You'd better stop away. These hills are far too rough for such as you."
So he waited, sad and wistful.
Only Clancy stood his friend.
"I think we ought to let him come,"
he said,
"for I warrant he'll be with us when he's needed at the end. For both his horse and he are mountain bred. He hails from Snowy River, up by Kosciuszko's side, where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough, where a horse's hoofs strike firelight from the flintstones every stride. The man that holds his own is good enough. And the Snowy River riders on the mountains make their home where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam. but nowhere yet such horsemen have I seen.
So he went.
They found the horses by the big mimosa clump. They raced away towards the mountain's brow, and the old man gave his orders.
Boys, go at them from the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them. Try and wheel them to the right. Ride boldly, lad, and never fear the spills, for never yet was rider that could keep that mob in sight if once they gain the shelter of those hills.
So Clancy rode to wheel them. He was racing on the wing,
where the best and boldest riders take their place.
And he raced his stock horse past them, and he made the rangers ring with the stock whip as he met them face to face.
Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but saw their well-loved mountain full in view.
And they charged beneath the stock whip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew.
Then fast the horsemen followed, where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread.
And the stock whips woke the echoes, and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead.
And upward,
ever upward,
the wild horses held their way where mountain ash and carrajong grew wide.
And the old man muttered fiercely,
"We may bid the mob g'day. No man can hold them down the other side."
When they reached the mountain summit, even Clancy took a pull.
It well might make the boldest hold their breath. And the wild hop scrub grew thickly,
and the hidden ground was full of wombat holes,
and any slip was death.
But the man from Snowy River let his pony have his head, and he swung his stock whip round and gave a cheer, and he raced him down the mountain like a torrent down its bed, while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the flint stones flying, but the pony kept his feet.
He cleared the fallen timber in his stride.
And the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat.
It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride.
Through the stringy barks and saplings, over rough and broken ground, down the hillside at a racing pace he went, and he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of that terrible descent.
He was right among the horses as they climbed the further hill.
And the watchers on the mountain, standing mute, saw him ply the stock whip fiercely.
He was right among them still as he raced across the clearing in pursuit.
Then they lost him for a moment where two mountain gullies met in the ranges. But a final glimpse reveals on a dim and distant hillside the wild horses racing yet, with the man from Snowy River at their heels.
And he ran them
single-handed
till their sides were white with foam.
He followed like a bloodhound on their track till they halted, cowed and beaten. Then he turned their heads for home, and alone and unassisted brought them back.
But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot. He was blood from hip to shoulder from the spur.
But his pluck was still undaunted, and his courage fiery hot, for never yet was mountain horse a cur.
And down by Kosciuszko,
where the pine-clad ridges raise their torn and ragged battlements on high,
where the air is clear as crystal,
and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky,
and where, around the overflow, the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes,
and the rolling plains are wide,
the man from Snowy River is a household word today.
And the stockmen tell the story of his ride.
My name's Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz, and I'm in Lightning Ridge with two of its very famous characters, Mel and Susie. Now, they are the bush poets and comedians in Lightning Ridge. How are you today, ladies?
G'day, Phil.
G'day, Phil. We're wonderful today.
We're real good.
Sun's shining, everything's perfect in beautiful Lightning Ridge.
Fantastic, ladies. Now, I'm going to just ask a few questions. First of all, Mel, how long have you been doing bush poetry?
For me, well over 20 years, Phil,
okay.
Well over 20 years, but I've always been raised with bush poetry. My father has been writing poetry since before I was born,
mm-hmm.
and that would be probably 20 years or so now.
Lucky you can't see your viewers.
Radio's good for that.
Actually, we're sitting here in our pyjamas and you don't know.
As I did say, listeners, they are comics as well as fantastic poets. Keep going, Mel. Tell us more.
Well, I've always grown up with poetry. My father, instead of reading us bedtime stories, he would recite his poetry to us, and he'd follow us around the house reciting his latest poem to Mum or my brother or I, whoever would be there. So I've always loved poetry, Banjo Paterson, Henry Lawson, my father's work. And in my mid-30s, I started to perform and have just been performing ever since. I love reciting poetry in front of an audience. I love the connection you get with that.
Then Melanie discovered that there's a competition circuit all over Australia. Small towns have beautiful small competitions. Then they go up to state competitions. And if you're really interested and passionate about competing with bush poetry, you can compete in the national title to become the Australian champion bush poetry reciter. So as soon as Melanie discovered that there were these little competitions, she started to go in them. And guess what? She started to win them almost immediately. She had a lot of success.
And Susie was the same. When she first started to compete in the bush poetry competitions, the same story as me. Her first competition, she won, and she very quickly rose up and became an Australian champion. So it's a wonderful way to hone your reciting skills.
So quite a few years ago, Melanie entered a competition out in Winton. They were so very fortunate. For 10 years they were sponsored by Qantas, which of course began its life out in Winton. It was called the Qantas Bush Poetry Australian Championships, and the male and female winner of that competition were able to fly then to America and perform at the Cowboy Poets Gatherings and do concerts all over the west coast of America and some of the central states. And Melanie, in 2004, the very final year that Qantas actually sponsored it, Melanie won that competition, and she got to go out to America and blow their minds with some Aussie bush poetry. Just tell them about the airport.
I got to the airport because I was being picked up by an American couple, and they said, we'll never recognise you in amongst all of the people. Right. How will we find you there? And I said, have a look for a 5-foot-tall woman with a black Akubra on her head, because I figured I'd be the only woman in that Denver airport with a black Akubra on my head.
Right.
And I was right. They'd never heard of Akubras in America. They had a sign that said Melanie Hall, and I found them. And over tea that night, she said to me, oh, Melanie, I was so embarrassed. I read your email, and I said to Eldon, what's an Accubra? And why would she be wearing a foundation garment on her head? That's a true story.
Unbelievable, girls. Now, when did you actually come together as a working team?
Melanie was very lucky again. She inherited a park out in Queensland, in Western Queensland, in Winton, from probably the best bush poet that we've had since Banjo Paterson, a fellow called Milton Taylor. A lot of the listeners will have heard of Milton and seen him perform. Sadly, we lost him 5 or 6 years ago. But when he packed up in Winton, he left the park to Melanie. And I was practicing for the Australian Championship. She said, come out here and just work with me for a few weeks, get some good practice in front of an audience. Well, what happened was we discovered that we clicked on stage so incredibly well. We've got exact opposite skills. So Melanie likes a nice structured show, and I like to free fall and ad lib everything. And we discovered that, in fact, we learned so much. I learned about structuring a show. Melanie learned about being a little bit looser and going with whatever happened in the audience. We discovered that we performed duo work very, very tightly and well together. But most importantly, I think we are so lucky, Phil. We're so lucky because we learn a poem very, very quickly.
Okay.
We can take a poem the length of something like Mulga Bill's Bicycle, and we can learn that in less than an hour, and we can perform that on stage that night.
Really?
Now, you'll never polish it up to competition standard, but as long as you're putting that in front of an audience, it's in your brain and you're working on that poem the whole time. Mm. We're so fortunate that we've got, and that comes from knowing a lot of poetry when you're a child and having parents dribbling poems into your ear from the earliest age.
Which we both had. My father was a writer of poetry and dribbled his poetry into our ear, but Susie's parents used to read her The Pied Piper of Hamelin as a bedtime story.
Right.
Poetry country as bedtime stories because she's actually Scottish. She was 12 when they came to Australia, so she's got all the British poetry behind her.
Yeah, I grew up with all the British romantic poets, Tennyson and Byron and Blake and all of those, Browning and everything. I just have to say to your listeners, though, I wonder if they know we're in the edge of the outback, 70 k's short of the Queensland border because of all the apostle birds in the background, Phil. Aren't they wild?
They are indeed. We're actually sitting at a hidden gem where we're doing this, listeners. Now, tell us all about A Hidden Gem, girls.
A Hidden Gem's our property in Lightning Ridge. There's an artist here called John Murray who has been in Lightning Ridge since the 80s, and he's an absolutely wonderful man and a fantastic artist.
People will have noticed as they travel outside the metropolitan area that there's a really wonderful new fad of painting water towers
and
silos.
Absolutely.
So there's a whole silo trail that you can... Some of these pictures are just... They're mind-blowingly wonderful, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
And same with water towers. So our local wonderful John Murray's been painting water towers. He's off to Bourke at the moment. But he's just done the one in Walgett. And you may know... Most of you, all your listeners, of course, will have heard of Jimmy Little. What a wonderful singer.
Yes.
Yeah, so Jimmy was a Yorta Yorta man, but he did have a connection to Walgett. I think his wife came from Walgett. And his daughter, Franny Peters Little, lives here in Lightning Ridge. And John's just done, they've just commissioned that beautiful water tower in Walgett with the Jimmy Little portrait. And John does a lot of water towers around here. He's a great artist.
He is. He's a wonderful artist. And when we came to Lightning Ridge, I fell in love with the town. I wanted to buy property here straight away. You can buy a mining claim with a little caravan and a shed on it for $5,000 if you're lucky. And I had a couple of grand in my pocket and I thought, let's buy a place. I want to live here. I love Opal. And I really did just fall in love with the country and the people here. And we came to buy a different property, but... I think someone was looking after us and it was meant to be the property that we originally came to buy didn't work out. It fell through and we went to the real estate agent. We said to Kim, show us what you've got in Lightning Ridge. And she said, this property's just come on the market and it's just
And this is the
stunning.
One we're at?
This is the one we're
it's
at. We've called it a hidden gem.
It's a beautiful place.
See, the idea in Lightning Ridge is from the outside, you don't want your property to look really good. You don't want people to think you're on Opal or you've got anything down your mine. So everywhere looks like a tip. Everywhere looks like a bit of a dump. There's old daggy old cars and there's old rusty iron. But when you get behind that rusty iron, people are so creative here. They're so wonderful. They start... working with iron or wood or bottles. We've got bottle walls and bottle houses up here out of sheer necessity because they didn't have any other building materials. And so they started, I'm going to have to get another six-pack, love. I'm putting on an extension.
Oh, goodness me.
So this property was built by John Murray. He built everything here. He started with basically a shed. He built what we call the old camp. He's built part of it dug out, so it's partly below ground and partly above ground. It's beautiful cypress pine logs as the foundations of the walls.
We must be the recycling capital of the world.
Yeah.
So everything that our property's made of has been reused, reloved, pre-loved, recycled.
Mosaic paths that Vicky Murray made from old tiles that she's reused and windows that have been reused from skyscrapers in Melbourne.
They might have a few cracks, but that just adds character.
It does indeed. It does indeed. And your bottle wall.
Our bottle fence is absolutely brilliant.
I think I'm going to build one of those when I get home, actually.
So, listeners, what we've done, we just drilled a little hole up the bum of the bottle and then we've put a piece of Rio through the bottle and threaded them all up the Rio. So in the afternoon, the sun just shines through the bottles and we get this wonderful, wonderful pattern on the concrete and you've recycled all your bottles into a unique, amazing fence.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, what about the a hidden gem? Let's go back to that just momentarily because you do perform performances here, you work at the Opal Caravan Park and you're pretty much there every day of the week, aren't you? Every night of the week there.
Monday to Friday at the Opal Caravan Park for this particular season.
And we do a happy hour show there for all the...
4:30 to 5:30. It's always family friendly and it's always lots of fun. If there's kids in the audience, we'll get them to hop up and do a poem with us because we despair, Phil. We absolutely lament the fact that A lot of Australian school children do their primary schooling these days and they never get to hear about Banjo Paterson, Henry Lawson. We ask the school kids who wrote Waltzing Matilda and they say, what's Waltzing Matilda? We're all a wonderfully, proudly, happily multicultural society and we know that and we love that. And I'm a migrant for heaven's sake. I love this country with all my heart. But there's got to be room for that Aussie culture too. Yes. There's got to be room for a little bit of Waltzing Matilda and I Love a Sunburnt Country. And the kids are just completely ignorant of it. Yeah. They've got no idea. And our idea is to make it fun for the children, make it really fun.
And when we go to the schools and we perform in front of the children or we've got children in our audience and we perform in front of them, it's so immediate. Children, everything is screen-based these days. Yes. They've all got their mobile phones, they've all got their little iPads and their little tablets, and they play games and they do everything on a screen. But to see a performance that's happening right in front of you that includes the children and involves the children...
Yep. Where anything might happen at any moment. Yeah. It's completely spontaneous and anything might happen.
And if we can just switch one kid on to going and having a look at a Banjo Paterson poem or one kid to maybe go and pick up a pen and have a go at writing a poem... It's so rewarding for us. During the school holidays, we sometimes have families in the park and their kids will come every day, 3 or 4 days, and they get up and perform with us every day. And we've had children come and say, I wrote this poem last night.
Oh, wow.
Can I read it? And we say, of course. And they get up on the stage and they read this little poem that they've written. And it's
we have tears in our eyes. We're so happy.
Yeah. It must be, yeah.
Every now and then we get an incredible reward, an incredible surprise. A few years ago we went to a primary school in Warren, which is, as you know, not that far from Dubbo.
Yep.
Warren, Nevertire, Narromine, back down to Dubbo. And the whole of the 3-4 class were able to recite The Man from Snowy River.
Their teacher was really passionate about Australian bush poetry and the entire class stood up and recited that poem to
we
us.
We wept.
We were babbling idiots.
We were just, honestly, we cried. There was tears and snot and bodily fluids going everywhere. It was just, and we've been to another school where the whole of the 5-6 class knew the Mulga Bill's Bicycle. Mm. And we so appreciate it when, say, for example, a little town like Orange, a Rotary has picked up the fact that Banjo Paterson was born down there. Now they've got a festival. Now the schools have all had workshops. Now they're picking it up more and more. And it's just a matter of embracing our own culture, which I think is so important for the kids to be grounded in that notion of a fair go and she'll be right, mate, and
mateship.
Working hard and mateship.
Well, listeners, I've actually spent a couple of hours here now with Mel and Susie at a hidden gem where they do a performance. They supply morning tea. They've got so much memorabilia in here, Banjo Paterson, Henry Lawson, and all the trophies that you've won, Mel. Your family must be so proud.
My dad's very proud of me. When I first started to compete and I won my Australian championship, the first one, in Charters Towers, my dad was like a little bantam rooster plucking all the feathers out of his chest. That's my daughter up there. That's my girl.
Yes.
And we've been working together so long now that mum and dad say, Have you seen the girls? Oh. Yeah. It's a lovely thing to carry on that family tradition because dad writes and recites and his father was a performer and a storyteller as well. So 100 years of storytelling in the family. It's a wonderful tradition.
Yeah, and not only that though. I mean, you're doing bush poetry and you do charity work as well, and you're going into the schools. But you also got this great cruise that you've been on too.
Tell
us just a little bit about that cruise.
We were so very lucky. Our wonderful friend Grant Lurs, who's a country music singer and an ABC radio presenter down at Wagga Wagga, Grant said to us, "Hey, girl, I'm getting together a breakfast comedy show for the country music cruise." And we looked at him with our eyes big and like, oh, can we come? That's why I'm mentioning it, girls. So we hop on to the country music cruise. Well, there's one due in November this year, but we're all a little worried in case it mightn't go ahead with all the COVID.
Yeah.
But if it does, it'll be a country music and rock cruise combined.
Right.
So we've got Susie Quattro. Who knew that she was still alive, eh? That's wonderful. Susie Quattro, and Didn't we all rock down to her?
Absolutely.
Oh, man, we all loved Susie.
So
she'd be on the cruise if it goes ahead.
If it goes ahead.
And then, of course, they've got all the great country music artists from Australia, John Williamson and Troy Cassidaly and all the wonderful artists that we'd know.
And right love. Down the bottom of the bill, the Bush Poets.
The very last line. Oh, Mel and Susie
as well.
It's great
well.
Fun to do all the right. cruise. We really enjoy that. It's really
an exciting holiday for us.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine this. Look, you girls, you're only young. You're not. Yes, no, I'm seriously.
No, Phil hasn't been to the optometrist for ages, listeners, and he really needs to go and get his glasses checked. I'm 60 this year.
Should have went to Specsavers.
Seriously, he needs to get back to Specsavers because he's peering at me over the way going, you're just young, and I'm thinking, oh.
Well, what I mean by that is, I know you were 60, but I wasn't going to mention that, but you've still got a lot of years ahead of you where your poetry is concerned for your hidden gem. You've obviously got big plans for that, and you're obviously going to make Lightning Ridge your home for the rest of your life.
I think so. We've been here for 6 years, I think, now, and it's
just
a
love
wonderful
it. Do you know it's the friendliest place I've ever lived in my life, and I can't get out. If you want to be part of this community, they will embrace you. The thing about being older, though, Phil, is it works if you're female and you're a comedian because we're getting fatter and fatter with every year. We just
and
can't shift it.
Wrinklier.
We're getting wrinklier. And do you know you can get naughtier and naughtier with your
the
comedy?
Older you get, it's
the older
great.
You get, the better, the funnier that you can be because you can get away with outrage. They think, oh, it's just an old woman saying that. And it's fantastic. You can get away with blue murder.
Shirley Friend, one of the naked poets, is an absolutely wonderful performer, and she's got to be in her 80s now, and she just looks like everybody's grandma. She's a little short, grey-haired lady, and she says the most outrageous
things.
And she gets away with it. And we keep thinking, give us another 10 years.
So you could possibly be doing nude poetry in the next 10 to 20 years?
You never know,
definitely.
Mate.
And one other good thing you said about the community here in Lightning Ridge is, if you die... They'll bury you in your mine shaft. It costs you nothing.
A community based, a voluntary funeral service.
Yep.
Is that not incredible?
That's fantastic.
It doesn't mean you have to volunteer to die. It's not like a suicide assistant.
I volunteered last year.
Yeah, I had to dig you up. You weren't ready. No one called your number. But it's a beautiful idea that. If you're living alone on a camp and living... Because we get a lot of vets come up here to escape.
Yep.
We had a lot of people who just have had a gutful of the city. They don't want that life. They want to do their own thing out here, and no one's going to ask them questions or bother them.
Yep.
And if something bad happens to them, it's so beautiful to know the Miners Association will tell all their pals and let them, all their friends know. Mm. The local mayor will do... I find that hard to say in Australian. The local mayor will come out and do a eulogy at our local cemetery, and the community will throw on a little bit of a wake. It's a beautiful idea. Mm. It works a lot better now that we've got a old fridge from the club.
You struggle to say mayor, but you can say eulogy. Oh, listeners, as you can see, Mel and Susie, two fantastic ladies, absolute wonderful comedians, fantastic poets. And if you're in Lightning Ridge, you make sure you go to the Opal Caravan Park, see them perform there live. And if you miss them live at the Opal, come out to a hidden gem.
Thank you so much, Phil.
Thank
That's
you,
a beautiful
Phil.
Thing. Lovely to have you out here, you and Lynn out here, and your little strange small dog.
Yes, which he thinks he's just a little Scottish terrier. Before we wind this up, girls, I've got to play a song. It's got to be Australian. Who's your favourite artist?
Well, Willow, I love John Williamson so much, but I especially love that he's written a really beautiful song all about Lightning Ridge.
Do you know any of it?
I know all of it.
Do you want to give us just a few bars to wind this up?
He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal, like a wombat or a mole, way out here in Lightning Ridge.
Oh, there you go, listeners. What an incredible performance. Mel and Susie from Lightning Ridge. Stick around for that Williamson classic, and we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that.
Don't ask any questions. Don't snoop around his claim. He'll be out with a dog and a shotgun. Who knows what he's hiding or why he makes his stand? Men like him are buried alive with opals in their hands. Well, they say he came from Lismore. That's about all we know. He came for a weekend only 20 years ago. Well, he must have had money in the bank, for he's found a lot more than potch. For every month he sends a cab for another case of scotch. He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Down below the leopard, blow the bimble box, get your thrill on Lunatic Hill. Flashes of dancing colour, green and gold and red. Mix it with black and you're on your back, digging until you're dead. Well, it's not about a fancy car, it's not about the cash. They passed the hat for a swimming pool and built it in a flash. No, it's all about the opal. You get it in your eye. You see a glimpse of heaven with angels in the sky. And you're a dreamer, you're a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. You're a schemer, you're a thinker, you're a lonely soul. You're gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Sing with me. He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge.
G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roman Oz if you've just joined us, and I'm at the Monday Bash chatting with Mark Smith from You Fix It. How are you going today, Mark?
Yeah, really good. How are you?
Oh, mate, I'm having a ball. The weather's fantastic. It's all getting ready for the big Monday Bash. But the thing that's attracted me to your store is you've got a product whereby you repair your own windscreens.
Yes.
So tell us all about this. This is a fabulous idea.
So basically, we've got a do-it-yourself kit. So they're available in every automotive retailer around Australia.
Okay.
So all you've got to do is search for the Bright Orange You Fix It packet.
Uh-huh.
So each kit, there's enough resin in there to do up to a 30-centimetre long crack. So basically, because of that, you could do about 4 to 5 about 50-cent piece-size damages.
Okay.
So the kit itself isn't just for the $35. Generally, that's the retail price. For that price, it's not just one repair. It works out to be about $6 to $7 a repair. Once you open the kit and you open your bottle of resin, you've got 5 years to use the remainder of the resin. So it's not just a one-use, throw it in the bin. Keep it in the glove box of your car. That way, when you get your damage, you can fix them straight away.
Right.
The resin, when it sets, is stronger than the glass. So basically, once you've done the repair, your damage is never going to spread any further.
Okay.
So it is just a do-it-yourself version of what the guys come out and do for you.
Fantastic. Now, how long does it take for the resin to dry? Like once you put it on, does it take an hour or half
yes,
a day?
Yes, no, does it work? It's very fast. So basically, the whole time is actually doing the repair. So depending on what type of damage you've got,
yep,
depends on how long the repair takes. So generally, most repairs anywhere from 20 minutes to half an hour. But the beautiful part about the kit themselves is the resin will never harden until you move it out to the UV from the sun.
Right.
So when you're doing the repair, do it in shade. You can take all day. You can leave it overnight. You can leave it as long as you want. The resin will only ever harden when you then take the next step and move it to direct sunlight.
Okay.
So it's pretty well foolproof. So that gives you the ability to work on that repair as long as you want.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to rush. It's not like super glue that's going to dry after 5 minutes and then stick your fingers to the screen.
Okay.
It will just basically, it takes as long as it takes. So some, as I said, take 20 minutes, but it just depends on how much cracking you've got. Most of them, 20 minutes is enough, is okay. All you need. And then move it out to the sun, under the direct UV from the sun, 5 minutes in the sun, peel the plastic strip off, scrape off your excess resin, and your repair's done.
So I've just noticed you've done a demonstration for me. So in the kit, you get a bottle of resin, you get some strips.
Yeah, so basically you get a bottle of resin, 10 little clear films, which are curing strips.
Yes.
You get a razor blade, a detailed set of instructions with a lot of pretty pictures, because as guys, we don't read instructions. So, but basically tells you everything you need to know about doing the repair. Plus it comes with the applicator. So basically you use the applicator when you've got a bullseye type of damage that's got more of a larger air pocket inside it.
Okay.
So you don't need to use that for just cracking, but if you're unsure which method to use, there's two methods in our instructions. You can use the applicator. It's not going to damage it. All it's going to do is absolutely nothing. So you're sort of just not doing anything, but you then, the next step of using the applicator is this process anyway. So whatever you don't get with the applicator, you'll get with the curing strip.
And you said with the curing strip, it doesn't matter if any of the resin, is that what it is?
Yes, resin.
If the resin should spill and run down the glass, it's not going to damage the glass, is it? It's not going to cure. It's only curing what's under the strip.
Under the strip. So there's a couple of reasons for that, but basically it's an anaerobic reaction, so it has to be lack of oxygen under the strip, and the UV has to go through that strip and changes the frequency of the UV so that it will then cure that resin. So anything that does dribble down, you can just wipe straight off. It's not like glue. It's not a sticky type of resin.
Right.
So just grab a paper towel or a cloth, wipe it off, and it comes straight off. So it's never going to stick to the screen. So it's a very easy cleanup afterwards.
Okay. And then once it's done, you just peel off that strip.
Peel the strip off, and basically the patch that you have where the resin is under the strip will then harden. Mm-hmm. So whatever pattern you have there, peel off the strip and then grab the razor blade that comes in the kit. Easiest way to use the razor blade is at a 90 degree angle.
Right.
Issue is it makes a bit of a squeaky fingernails on a blackboard noise.
Okay, yep.
Won't damage the screen, so you can go as hard as you want and just scrape that excess resin straight off.
Scrape it off and it's fixed.
Yes, absolutely.
Simple as.
Very simple. So a lot of people overcomplicate it because it's glass, think it's very technical.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've done your first repair, you can do a million of them. It's very, very straightforward.
It's a great product to carry because if you're out somewhere, out in the bush, driving through the country, a truck throws a stone up at you, you can virtually pull over and repair it right there on the side
of
the road.
Exactly. All you need to do for a repair is just out of direct sunlight. So find a shady spot, put a tarp up, umbrella over the screen, just out of direct sunlight, and you can take as long as you want to do that repair.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, the beautiful part about the repair is once it's repaired, it will never spread any further.
Mm.
And if you do it properly, you shouldn't be able to see the repair.
Wow.
So
again, the product is $35. That gives you about 7 repairs, you said, on average?
About 4 to 5. The whole thing is the less resin you use per repair, the more repairs you get out of the kit.
Okay.
So a lot of people think the more resin I put in that applicator, the better repair I'm going to get out of it.
Doesn't work that way.
No.
You're just wasting
the
resin.
The 4 to 5 drops that it says in the instructions is all you need. So you've got plenty of resin in the kit. So keep it all together. That way next time you get your damage, do your repair again.
Fantastic. Now, where can they purchase this product?
So the kits are basically available at Repco, Supercheap, Autobarn, Burson, just about every single automotive retailer out there. If it's not, ask for it, and they have the ability of getting it.
Fantastic.
So You Fix It is the brand. That's all people need to remember.
There you go, listeners. You Fix It, you'll fix it. It's as simple as that.
Exactly. If you break it, you fix it.
Mark, thank you so much for taking the time.
No worries. Thank you.
Mate, I've got to wind this up. We are at the Monday Bash, and I only play Aussie. You got a favourite Aussie band?
We certainly do. We all enjoy Computer Games by MySex.
All right. Well, stick around for more Roman Oz, listeners, straight after MySex Computer Games. Thank you so much for your time, Mark.
No worries. Thank you. We'll be right back.
7th Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au.
Oh, hello, listeners. Welcome back. This is Raymond Oz. I'm Phil C. And we are talking to the man that's got the acronyms, the facts and figures about weights, Mr. Jeff Diaf from Checkweight. How are you going today, Jeff?
I'm going really well, Phil. Thanks for asking.
Oh, mate, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program, and I'm glad you're doing well physically. I know you had a knee surgery some while back, and I'm glad to hear that that's all going well for you.
Back onto the weighing now, so yep. That's really good.
Excellent. So what are we going to discuss today, Jeff?
Look, I thought we might talk about towing capacity and, in particular, brake towing capacity.
Okay.
Because it's the one that the industry talks about over and over and over. But I think a few people don't really understand exactly what it is.
Right.
And interestingly, it's probably the least one that I see people exceed, though.
Okay. So what is that? What is the least that you just said?
Well, it's towing capacity.
Right.
So it's the one that the vehicle manufacturers and the caravan manufacturers and just the, generally the media, like yep. If you're looking on a review of a vehicle, they always talk about the brake towing capacity. So just to explain what brake towing capacity is,
right.
Anything that's weighs more than 750 kilos, and we're talking trailers here,
yes.
So caravan, box trailer, you know, boat, what anything, needs to be braked. Right. So if your camper trailer weighs 900, it should be braked.
Okay.
So when we talk about brake towing capacity, that's the maximum ATM or aggregate trailer mass of the trailer that you're allowed to tow.
Okay.
So generally they'll say unbraked towing capacity is 750 for a vehicle because that's the law. And then, you know, the well-known one is you've got 3,500 kilogram or 3.5 ton
yes.
brake capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I suppose one of the things that I think a lot of people get confused on is that they think it's caravan. It's a towing capacity. So right. when you're buying a vehicle, they'll say it's got a 3,500 towing capacity,
right.
or you can tow a caravan at that weight.
Right.
So it's not specific to caravans. It's yep. a trailer.
Right? Okay, right.
And I suppose the reason I emphasise that is that, you know, if you've got a boat that's 3.5 ton, it's very different to a caravan, which is very different to a tradie towing a trailer with some equipment down the road to a job site that's 3.5 ton.
Okay.
You know, if you're towing your boat down to the marina, you're not taking all the extra stuff that you are in a caravan because you're only going for a day.
Mm.
So when you're loading your vehicle up, you're not necessarily taking all that extra gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where people get into trouble a little bit is that they go, oh, I can tow 3.5 tons. So you buy a caravan with an ATM or aggregate trailer mass of 3.5 tons.
Right.
And then you realise that you're then breaking one of the other acronym laws.
Okay.
To explain that is, I suppose we use just a Ford Ranger as an easy example.
Right.
They have a brake towing capacity of 3.5 tons. So in theory, they're allowed to tow 3.5 ton.
Mm-hmm.
However, they have a GVM or a gross vehicle mass of 3,200.
Right.
So if you load your vehicle to the maximum, which is 3,200, and you're towing a 3.5 ton caravan, well, guess what? You're going to then exceed your GCM or gross combination mass.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at towing, and especially a caravan, I think it's always wise to look in the upper, end of the market, look at least 500 kilos or less than your brake towing capacity.
Right.
So, for example, you've got a Ranger, you can tow 3.5 ton. Don't buy a caravan that's more than, 3,000 kilos. If you're, you know, driving an old Prado and it's 2.5 ton towing, buy a caravan that's 2 ton.
Right. That's an awful lot of weight. It makes perfect sense. But I guess the issues here is that the caravans, as you know and I know, they're getting larger, they're getting heavier. And 3.5 ton seems to be the magic number or the goal that people strive for, you know, because most of the vehicles, the Ranger, the BG50, the 200 series, they've got 3.5 ton of towing capacity and braked towing capacity. But, yeah, I guess they think, well, they're not really considering what they're putting in the back of their vehicle, are they? If it's a ute, they probably load it up with bicycles and Lord knows what else for the kids for the holidays. You know, if it's a Land Cruiser, it's going to have a fridge and everything else in the back. We've discussed this before. And then all of a sudden they're over.
And I suppose that's why I get irritated by the marketing that's done by vehicle manufacturers and caravan manufacturers.
Yes.
I mean, if you walked into a, you've got a Land Cruiser and you walk in and you look at a caravan at a shop and it's a 3.5 ton ATM, the guy will say, oh, you've got a Land Cruiser, you can tow that.
Yes.
That's not correct because it depends on what you do when you walk out after you've purchased that caravan, how much you load in.
How much you load
in. The same, you know, if you go to a, a car salesman and say, oh, I've bought a 3.5 ton caravan, what can I tow it? And you'd say, oh, you can use a Ranger or you can use a Land Cruiser or whatever. But it's the same as, again, there's other laws and there's other, you know, the weight acronyms that you have to be aware of.
Right.
So the industry focuses on towing capacity.
Yes.
So use your brain. Mm-hmm. It's a maximum. It's a limit. And I think we've talked about these before. One of my favourite sayings, it's a limit, not a goal.
Yeah, correct.
So if you and, I mean, you know, like my wife's got a little Subaru XV and it says it can tow 1,200 kilos.
Yes.
You know, honestly, it can't. You know, you're towing at about 800, 850, maybe 900, you know, the bum is hanging in the ground. Mm. So if you're towing 1,200 and then you're putting stuff in the vehicle, then you're going to be over.
Yeah.
So probably, you know, at the top end, look about 500. Once you go down to about that, you know, 1,500, 2,000, probably look at about 250 to 300 kilos, less than your maximum towing capacity.
Yep.
And, you know, don't focus just on the towing capacity. Mm-hmm. Look at everything else that you're going to be using the vehicle for and what else you're going to be needing to carry in it.
So I guess the as you keep saying, you know, it's don't just because the vehicles can go or the caravan can go to 3.5 ton, because usually on a caravan that's 3.5 ton, that's with about 600 kilos of payload, isn't it, to take it to that 3,500.
Well, look, some of the caravans now, and I've weighed a few, where they're actually getting 800, 900 kilo of payload.
Right.
So I think that's a good point. So if your ATM's 3.5, but your tear is 2.7, it means you've got 800 payload.
Yeah, so then only use 400, only use half your payload.
Or even if you're only using 500. Yeah. But that's, you know, and it's probably a good sales thing for when you resell the caravan that it's got that massive payload.
Mm.
But if you're, you know, buying a caravan that weighs 3,000 kilos and you're going to be towing it 3.5, then no doubt you're going to be having issues with your GCM or your rear axle weight or your GVM of the vehicle because you're adding that heavy tow ball weight onto your vehicle.
Yeah, because I've seen, I think the last caravan I used, which was given to me by the 7th Street Caravans to take out as a demo, the tear weight of that, and it was a fully off-road, they called it an all-terrain, the tear weight was 2970. So you're nearly 3 ton just with the bare bones, you know what I mean? So that was certainly a 3.5 ton caravan, because by the time you fill up your two water tanks, there's 180 kilos gone in water. And then you got your gas bottles, there's another 20. So there's 200 kilos gone in water and gas. So you got 300 kilograms of payload. And if you use your 300 kilos of payload, then you're right on your maximum specs. Like you said, and I don't think it's a good thing, just because your car has the capacity to tow 3.5 ton braked, I don't think you should do that all day, every day if you're going around Australia, because imagine the stress and strain it is, in fact, putting on the vehicle.
Totally agree, Phil. And the other thing to be aware of, I mean, I know you've got a Land Cruiser, but if you're towing with a Ranger that weighs, 3 tonne,
yes,
because, you know, you can't load it fully because you've got a 3.5-tonne caravan, and your caravan's weighing, well, say you've only loaded it to 2.9 and your caravan's 3.1.
Yeah.
Because that's your 6 total.
Yeah.
It means that your caravan's heavier than your vehicle.
Yes.
And that's ideally as well. Yeah. There's a lot of people talk about the tail wagging the dog.
Mm.
When things are all good, and we talk about that all the time, when things are good, things are okay. But when things go pear-shaped, if your caravan is heavier than your vehicle, then it's not ideal.
No.
In Australia, as far as I'm aware, there's no law that says that your caravan has to be lighter. I think in Europe they talk about 85%, but I don't like to compare to Europe because their roads, their caravans, their vehicles are all completely different.
Of course.
But, I have a ticker across if people exceed 90%. So if the caravan weighs 90% or more, they get across because I just don't like to see people pushing more and more weight into the caravan, even if it's got capacity.
And I certainly don't think it's a good idea to be having, you know, all that weight pushing you along, because it does push, especially if you're going downhill. And then all of a sudden your car's got to try and stop it, plus something that's bigger or heavier than it wanting to go down the hill.
I think you've talked about it before. It's more weight you've got, the more your brakes are going to work. And, if you've got slippery or windy conditions, then the harder it is going to be stop all this. Totally agree with that. So just because there is a limit doesn't mean you have to,
exceed it, And also I suppose the rule of thumb would be, if you want to pull a caravan that weighs 3,500, you should consider yourself getting one of these American-style utes like the Rams or the GCMs or the Silverados or something like that, because they've got like 4.5-tonne towing capacity, don't they?
Yeah. Be aware that their payloads are compromised sometimes. So if you're looking at maximum 3.5, you really need to be thinking about what you're towing with and whether you really need to have a 3.5-tonne caravan.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of cases, I see a lot of people who, buy the big off-road caravan and then spend half their time in caravan parks or on the blacktop.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I was actually talking to one of the other guys who does caravan weighing in Western Australia yesterday, and he said he weighed this guy and he had 4 110-litre
water tanks. Yeah.
So that's 440 litres of water.
Yes.
And he said there's just no way he could be legal with the water tank full.
No.
Because it just didn't have the payload. If you're carrying that much water, then that means you're doing a lot of off-roading and, free camping. Yep. So you need the water. So you need the other stuff as well. Unless you've got 1,000 kilo payload, then, you're going to be over with that much water supply.
I think I might have mentioned, you may have forgotten, it was about a month, 6 weeks ago, I met a chap when I was on the road and I spoke to him about he had this brand new caravan and it had 6 water tanks.
Yes, you did mention that.
Yeah, and a grey water tank. And I thought, well, that grey water tank's going to be like a sneeze in the ocean if you're going to use 6 water tanks. And I said, why 6 water tanks? How much does this caravan weigh? Oh, around 3.5 ton. He didn't really know, or if he did, he didn't want to tell me. But I did. I crawled underneath and I had a look, and there were 6 water tanks on this thing. And I said, why do you want to carry that much weight? I mean, you can't even carry it. He was using 100 series. But, convinced he was okay to pull it, because if he didn't pull it with those water tanks full, he was fine. He was going to fill those up when he needed them. so I don't know when he was going to need them, but anyway.
I think he needs to contact a mobile weigher or at least run it over a weighbridge and, full, because there's no point doing it when it's empty.
No. Well, if he was to fill it up, he'd be well and truly overweight because – and he tried to compromise that by saying to me, but I got lithium batteries. And I thought, well, 2 lithium batteries is not the price of one water tank full. So, and you've got 6 of the blessed things. So you're in trouble already. So anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
So anything else to discuss? Or do you think we've covered it all in this one?
Yeah, we concentrated there on braked towing capacity.
Yes.
So that's what we were talking about.
Yeah. Absolutely. So what can I finish up this segment with, Jeff? What's your song for today, my friend?
Oh, look, yeah, this might be a bit controversial for some.
Yes.
But if you're towing at your 3.5 ton, you might be on the highway to hell.
DC. Well, I got to.
I hope you're not.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if that fella with the 6 water tanks had him fully, not only would he be on the highway to hell, he'd also be on the highway underground, I think. So it's a good choice of song. And remember that, listeners. What's your favourite saying? Just because you have it, it's a goal, not a. Because I don't remember that.
It's a limit, not a goal.
It's a limit, not a goal, listeners, okay? So just because you can put him in there doesn't necessarily mean you have to. Thank you so much for your time today, Jeff.
No worries. Thanks, Phil. You have a great week. Travel safe.
Okay, here we go, listeners. We are going to be back with more Roaming Oz straight after AC/DC's Highway to Hell.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or RoamingOz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roaming Oz.